Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. In today's episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast, we're bringing back my friend, Dan David. If you missed my first interview with Dan, I highly recommend you go back to our site and listen. Dan and I go way back, all the way to high school in the late 1980s outside Flint, Michigan. Dan was known around our high school as a no BS kind of guy, and that clearly hasn't changed, as you're going to hear in this interview. Dan is the founder of Wolfpack Research, a firm that's widely regarded as leaders in both the China due diligence and in the U.S. microcap space. Dan's work on exposing fraud on Chinese companies led to him being profiled in the movie The China Hustle. The movie was backed by Mark Cuban and produced by Oscar winner Alex Gibney, who produced the movie Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room. Dan's spoken at several congressional hearings on the topic of investment fraud, but he found that the culture of D.C. is so anti-common sense and so anti-investor that it actually motivated Dan to run for Congress a couple years ago. Now, in this interview, we're going to touch on the current financial situation, the end game for the economy, as well as China and shorting stocks. I hope you enjoy. All right, Dan, it's great to have you back on the show. Really excited to chat.
Thanks for having me back, Kirk.
Yeah. So the last time we chatted, you were still with Geo Investing, where you kind of made your name. And now you've launched Wolfpack Research. So just, you know, how's the launch gone? And can you talk a little bit about what you do at Wolfpack?
The launch has gone great. I Geo Investing, for the first 11 years of the investing I did there, I had a partner that was kind of in the small microcap long side research. And then the China fraud scandal hit a couple of years into that, and that really kind of became my bag. But over time, it just didn't work, right? I mean, he couldn't go to a conference and have a smaller microcap CEO even speak to him because of who his partner was, because I could be they could be my next target, right? That's microcap synonymous with fraud, almost as synonymous as China. So that became some tension. Of course, the movie, and you know, the way they treated him in the movie, cutting him out, created some tension. It had nothing to do with me, but whatever, that's life. The run for Congress, things of that nature, just kind of grew apart. And Carson Block, who he and I had become very good friends, and he, in my opinion, is the, you know, best short activist short seller in the world, and has a huge fund and great success, you know, asked me to start out on my own, and, you know, wanted to invest in my firm. And that's what I did. And we've had a fantastic year. It's been great.
Good, good.
The only misstep I made was moving my office to New York and getting an apartment in New York. I still live in Pennsylvania because my wife won't live in New York, as she explained to me that anything bad happens in the United States, it'll happen in New York first. Turns out she was right.
Yeah.
So, I've got those expenses I'm carrying for the last few months, but, you know, it's fine. We're doing really well.
Wow. So you actually have an apartment in New York City.
Yeah, it's interesting, Kirk, because when my wife and I first got married 20 years ago, I ran the Lord & Taylor division of jewelry. But she was in the Philadelphia area, so was I. They were moving me to New York, where that office is on 5th and 38th. And I was either commuting up there or flying around the country. It's, you know, 77 stores, something like that. And at one point I said to her, you know, this commute is starting to kill me. I should probably get a place up there. And she said, look, I didn't get married so you could have an, pied-à-terre in New York. You do that and we're getting divorced. So, you know, once I came back from this campaign and I was breaking off from Geo Investing, I'm like, look, you know, if I'm going to start my own firm, It should be in New York. She's like, go, just go. That's what 20 years of marriage does for you. I just don't care anymore. Just go.
Yeah. It's a nice break. It's probably what she's thinking, huh? So.
Yeah, I think she enjoys it.
So with Wolfpack, it sounds like you're strictly focused or mostly focused on purely the short side, right? Not long, short, just mostly short. Okay.
That's it. Short activism. And, you know, I've got, you know, in all the TV hits that I do with Bloomberg or CNBC or, you know, doing another podcast next week, people ask me for a bio. The first thing I say on there, I consider what I do is freedom of speech activism. Because really, the pushback is against free speech, especially when it comes to China. But that's, you know, nobody has a problem with free speech when they're pumping a stock, right? When they're saying all the great things about a stock. And if they're wrong, they were just, whoa, they were really optimistic. I guess they were wrong. But if I'm out there calling out management and pointing out the problems, well, you know, everybody wants to sue me. And they do. And they try to tamp down free speech. So that's what I feel like I do.
Okay. And with Wolfpack, are you selling the research? Are you actually managing money for people? How does it function?
No, I don't sell my research. I'm blessed in life to be able to just, you know, invest my own money.
Okay.
And Carson is involved in my fund as well and my research. So, you know, we're publicly out there. You know, as soon as I launched Wolfpack, Carson and I went on CNBC. We said we're together in this. I'm not in his firm, Muddy Waters. I don't have an interest there, but he does in Wolfpack. And, you know, that's over $300 million in there if and when I need it. And then I've got a decent amount of money myself.
Okay. All right. So he's basically kind of invested in you is essentially what's going on. Outside of your own money that he's
my team, Wolfpack.
Okay.
Wolfpack.
Okay. Okay.
I built an entire team from the ground up. They've been fantastic. I've been really lucky right out of the gate to get a great lead analyst, Reed Sherman. Plucked him right out of college, and he's been fantastic. And a UT grad who beat out several NYU and Columbia grads. He's been doing great. I've got two other analysts, one in the UK and one in Virginia. And then I've got my China team, which I just don't discuss in detail.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, as you look at the markets right now, and even ignoring like the big decline, the big up, I mean, do you find it's easy to find good shorts out there?
Well, it's always been easy to find good shorts, but, you know, it's only a good short if the rest of the market agrees with you when you're short.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
it's
not good.
I mean, do you find that there's success with that? There's all kinds of talk about how the whole ETF indexing is basically been carrying stocks that are, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, total shit because they're part of the index. So, you know, you may be right fundamentally, but it doesn't work out as far as the markets. And then you look at companies like Tesla, depending on what side you see it. I mean, the shorts have been brutalized with them. So, I mean, do you find that there's still an environment where it's kind of easy to short, or do you think it's
never, ever going to be easy to short ever.
Okay.
Easy to short. And you know, I know Jim Chanos, he was on Tesla first. I remember, you know, going to an event with him when he was talking to me about Tesla back in 2018. And he really is spot on correct. Now, you know, because there's a cult following and people will really view this stock 5 and 10 years out as, you know, the autonomous leader, whatever. The fact of the matter is Elon Musk lies. He does the shadiest shit with SolarCity. And, you know, he should not be a CEO. He's a fantastically creative inventor and somebody the world needs. He's just not somebody we need to be running a public company. because, you know, you can speak in the abstract about what you want to invent and what you're going to do and be wrong, but that's not how you should view guidance or company outlook. And that's been the problem with Tesla, and I've always stayed away from it, thank goodness. And, you know, Jim's not getting killed in this stock. You know, Jim's fund, he never takes more than a 2 to 4, maybe at max a 5% position in a company. And I don't think he was ever that heavy in Tesla. And generally not long. But yeah, it just shows you how hard it is to be correct. They don't make money. They're not going to make money. Companies don't have to make money, especially in biosciences. So that's a hard one to go after as well. You really got to prove fraud. That's why I go after fraud. That's why I go after misrepresentation, or I go after, you know, real accounting shenanigans. You know, this whole kind of adjusted EPS. People just don't understand. Adjusted is bullshit. Adjusted is whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
That's a term of art that is specific to each company. So adjusted EPS could be like, you know, after costs of being a public company. What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
All kinds of silly stuff like that. So we've really got to get back to looking at, you know, does a company make money? Does it not make money? Because that's going to be super important very, very soon.
I mean, do you think it is going to be important soon, or you think that somehow with just the massive amount of money coming out of the Fed, the liquidity, it's just masked all this stuff, you know, and how long can they continue that?
I don't think they can continue it into next year. I just don't. I mean, our national debt is beyond incredible. It's beyond anything I ever imagined we could go to. I mean, we can't raise interest rates, right? So if we raise our interest rates, our debt payments will be higher than our, you know, what we pay for national defense. You know, we're already paying like $400 billion in just interest, and the interest rate's like nothing.
Yeah.
And $700 billion in national defense. So and the net effect of this, you know, is, you know, people talk about the wealth gap that we have between the haves and the have-nots. And they don't really look at the shift in the economic model that we have in the last 50 and specifically 30 years away from the gold standard into this Keynesian model of just print money until, you know, everybody's happy. That being the case, you've got to pay interest on that money. And people think, you know, oh, we just won't pay China. China owns $1 trillion of our now over $24 trillion in debt. We owe ourselves 75% of that debt. We owe Social Security. We owe unfunded pension liabilities. We owe individual investors. We owe ourselves that money. So if we're not going to pay somebody, we're not paying ourselves, and we're screwed. Forget the China thing. They don't own that much of our national debt. And that becomes that people just don't understand it. And at this level, I don't know how we got from net zero in 2000 to where we are now, but it's insane.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and you identified, you know, with unfunded liabilities with Social Security, Medicare, pensions. I mean, there's, you see things, $120 trillion of unfunded liabilities. I mean, how do you kind of, what's sort of the end game?
The end game is really bad. I mean, look, there can't be an audit. Like the Treasury, I think we owe the Treasury like $12 trillion now, I guess, or maybe a little over $10 trillion after this latest round. You know, go ahead, audit the Treasury. Good luck with that. You know, audit the DOD. Good luck with that. We don't even know where these holes are. It's just a whack-a-mole kind of a thing. So, and keeping these interest rates this artificially low is bad for our lower income individuals. I mean, you think about it now, where can you make money? You can only make money in the stock market. That's it. It's the only game in town. It costs money to own real estate. you've got onerous expenses, and you know, and depending on what state you live in, that could be another landmine, townships you've got to deal with. But you know, real estate maybe some, but otherwise stock market. It used to be that you could put money in a bank and gain interest. And that's what lower income individuals did. And they got 3% a year. That's what our older community did, people in their 70s and 80s, and they got 3% a year, compounded. Now it costs money to have a bank account. So these people who are not going to be in the stock market, especially the lower income individuals, are not going to invest in the stock market. They don't have that kind of discretionary money. They're losing 3% compounded or more if they got a 6-month CD. That's creating a wealth gap in and of itself. And then we're asking 70, 80, and 90-year-olds to risk all of their money in the stock market because they can't put it anywhere else. So a deep pullback could crush them before they die.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you think eventually, at some point, do you think the populace is going to come get wise to this and demand change? Or do you think the system just continues on until it naturally implodes? Or, I mean, what do you kind of think might happen?
We are an implosion people. That's who we are. And people have to die. People have to go broke. People we know, people we love have to suffer. And then it matters.
Okay.
So I don't think there's going to do I see common sense in Congress? No. Do I see it out of the executive branch? No, I do not. In either party. So, you know, nominally, the only branch of government we have that works is the judiciary. The other two are just completely dysfunctional at this point.
Yeah.
And you only have two choices. I mean, you're either a liberal who doesn't believe in borders and you need to announce yourself with your preferred gender pronoun, or you're this mouth breathing Republican who just wants to shoot shit. I don't know how I got out of the Republican primary. I really don't. I'd have never got out of the Democratic primary if I went that way.
Yeah.
But there's no place for us in the middle. There really isn't, because you can't get through the primary. You can't. If you're not pandering to one or the other, you can't get through the primary. I mean, you look at Joe Biden. He's not even Joe Biden anymore. Not just that he's mentally diminished over the last 10, 15 years as anybody would be. But I mean, he's out there looking for the best female, one-third black, one-third Asian, one-third Hispanic, disabled, gender-neutral, binary candidate to run with him.
Who was a veteran probably as well,
the guy can't win. I mean, sure, I'll take Michelle Obama. Really? Okay. I wasn't sure what office she held, but let's go ahead and roll the dice.
Yeah. Well, and it's not even that. The one that scares me the most is the Federal Reserve has completely abandoned any semblance of responsibility or prudence.
They have no independence. Is what you're saying? Yeah, they have none. I mean, they're watching the stock market closer than President Trump is, and that's a pretty bad thing. I actually thought, I thought Bernanke was the smartest guy in the room in 2009. Anyway, I was not at all happy that in Obama's last 2 years of his second term, he didn't end quantitative easing, because it's got to end at some point. Right now, when we need it again, we're back in a hole. But what we have now is just bullying the Federal Reserve, and it's not good for our country.
Yeah. Well, and what are they going to eventually? It seems like they won't let the market go down more than 5% without coming in. And are they ever?
Well, they're not going to have a choice, Kirk. They're not going to have a choice. It's going to go down, and it's going to go down hard. And we know that it can. We saw it happen. And you know, it'll be tied to real estate. It'll be tied to foreclosures and bankruptcies of small and medium business. I think this administration has done a very smart thing in at least verbalizing that they're going to concentrate on small and medium business. I don't know that it's completely gone that way, but at least it's part of the conversation where it wasn't before. And it was just these bailouts of, you know, banks too big to fail that are now bigger than countries.
Yeah.
Not good. That commit fraud every year and just pay a fine because it's just baked into their fucking P&L. I mean, how does a bank commit fraud? It's impossible. People at a bank commit fraud. But since nobody goes to jail, they'll pay a fine.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, you kind of see it like the Fed is facing, you know, they've so far been treating it like a liquidity crisis, but really we're getting into a solvency crisis.
We are getting into a solvency crisis. And China is too. We're 1.3 times our GDP right now in debt. We were one. China's three times. So you got the two largest economies that are just, you know, headed to a crisis point, and it's going to be a reset. It really is. And I think those with the most innovation and technology and wherewithal will win. And there's got to be some toughness in there too. And undoubtedly, we are a very, very tough country at one point, but we are soft as hell now.
I mean, that's the thing. Nobody wants to let anything fail. We don't want any real true price discovery. So, you know, I'm grappling with this. What's the end game? At what point does the market force our hand and the Fed just,
well, look,
despite printing, it's just not going to work?
It's hard for me to say, you know, October 2021.
Oh, yeah. Nobody knows that. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, the idea that any one of us cannot spend beyond our means infinitely, but all of us collectively can, notionally makes no sense.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, as we as individuals fail, we as a collective will fail. So we'll see more individual failures at a business level, at an individual level, and then collectively it'll start to fail and be systematic failure. Our tie-ins with China are huge. And this trade deal was not good. I mean, look, I give the president all the credit in the world for doing things I did not believe he would do. Renegotiating NAFTA, is it a great deal? No. Is it better? Yes. Nobody said you could even do better. So, you know, say good job when it's, you know, time to say good job. With China, is it a better deal? Yeah. Is it, you know, what we need? No. I mean, part of this deal, you got to look at the details. China wants us to come in now and invest in their non-performing loans. So, they've put that law in there. So, and believe me, BlackRock's going to do it. And all these venture firms are going to do it. And it's going to be your money. And people don't understand that there's teachers' pensions and everything is tied up. Investing through Hong Kong on Morgan Stanley's private equity 1, 2, 3, and 4, all of our money is invested in China. In 2008, they had a couple $100 billion on our U.S. capital markets, and almost all those companies were frauds. Since then, they saw what happened to us, and they were largely kind of untied to us financially other than trade. They didn't have a lot of real estate. They didn't have a lot of companies on our market. Since then, they've attached themselves to the world because they knew their time is coming, right? So now we're looking at almost $2 trillion on our U.S. markets between real estate and stocks listed on our market. Then there's another over $1 trillion that we have invested through Hong Kong in their companies in mainland China. So they're looking at least $3 trillion that were entangled with China now through direct investments, non-trade related. This is a huge jeopardy to us.
Okay.
And by the way, they're not responsible for committing fraud. Still, it's not illegal to steal from a U.S. citizen in China. If a Chinese citizen steals from another Chinese citizen, they can get the death penalty. If they steal from us, you know, I know one guy that was appointed to provincial Congress for stealing $400 million.
Do you think we've seen, I just today, I mean, Trump came out and talked about how he's going to try to prevent federal retirement monies from investing anything in China. I mean, you think he sees the fraud and is actually going to do something about it, or you think he's just kind of saber rattling?
Well, there's been a weird dynamic in this whole China investment issue. You know, where Trump was dealing with trade, and he's dealing with national security, IP theft, which we definitely needed, although I don't see that improving, and forced technology transfers. They buy a stake in a company, right? Take all their technology, really. So, and Rubio had started, you know, it started out as Stop the China Hustle, quote unquote, and has turned into the Equitable Act, which would, in essence, delist, you know, all China-based companies from our exchanges that don't meet our standards and are not able to be inspected by the PCAOB. And the two never really spoke to each other about this. Like, you never hear Trump mention the Equitable Act, right? And Rubio's in his party. You don't really hear Rubio talk much about the trade deal in support of it. So there's something going on in that dynamic there that isn't super supportive. And I can't quite put my finger on it other than, you know, I don't know. They don't get along. Rubio's bill is bipartisan. I don't know that it'll pass. He's still going to have to get that by McConnell and Toomey, who, you know, the less they say, the more scary it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
the other thing too, do you think that some of the, you know, index providers might start to alter a little bit the amount of the emerging market indexes that are allocated to China? I mean, you're looking at least 20% in most of them.
It's 40 in the emerging MSCI, the largest in the world in the emerging market index is 40. It was 25 when they just had Hong Kong. And since they included China, that added 15. So it's 40% of their balance, which is horrible. They won't do a damn thing. Look, these are for-profit companies, period. So they're going to make a profit where they think they can make a profit, and it's not going to be a problem until it's a problem. And when it is a problem, they get paid anyway. That's your problem.
Okay.
That's the way it's always been. I mean, these guys are raking in hundreds of millions of dollars in salaries and, you know, tens of billions in fees. So, you know, they're not going to stop doing that. No way. And when things blow up, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, who knew?
Yeah. So you don't see any kind of pressure on them?
They've been questioned about it. They don't answer the questions. I mean, I've talked to reporters from the FT, the Wall Street Journal, from wherever, and they're like, hey, man, we reach out to MSCI. We reach out to, you know, Morgan Stanley's private equity. No comment.
Yeah.
What are they gonna talk? Yeah, they don't have to.
Well,
who's gonna make the talk, Kirk? You and me?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So you've had a lot of success way back at Geo Investing and now at Wolfpack, looking at Chinese companies and going against them. You want to kind of talk a little bit about what you found in your research?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, when you talk about short selling, and I would not be successful in what I do if I didn't make a name for myself, and I couldn't catalyze my research, right? So when I put out my research, I can go on television, or as soon as I, you know, publish it, there are thousands of people looking at my research and making a decision for themselves. Do they buy into what I'm saying? Do they not? And, you know, if you have a reputation, they generally do. So you say the same thing about Carson Block and a few others. But, you know, generally, for those people who think, well, I'll just be short the entire market, you're going to get run over more often than not. And your losses can be infinite. Like, you know, you're buying a stock, you're putting $10,000 in it, you can lose $10,000. You're shorting a stock, $10,000, your losses can be infinite. Like, you can just keep going up.
Yeah.
So it's not something everybody should do. And what, you know, what we found with China, and look, this is about American companies too, but more pervasive in China, because let's face it, if it's not illegal to steal from American investors, why wouldn't they? It's like saying to American companies, it's not illegal to steal from U.S. investors. I mean, they do it as it is. How much would they do it if they couldn't go to jail for it? Not that they do very much. And really, with U.S. companies and China companies in general, our biggest issue, the people are missing the point, is a lack of corporate governance. There is really no such thing as an independent board of directors anymore. And we call it, you know, the board of directors, right? And who do the board of directors represent?
Usually the CEO. Yeah, well, they're supposed to.
Right, they're supposed to represent the shareholders, but they do not. It's a cottage industry where they $50,000 a year in salary and 10 times that in stock options, and they do not do independent investigations unless they're forced to, especially in China, where they're generally family members, you find out down the road. But here in the United States, it's a big problem too. So when you have these big blowups, like, you know, when Wells Fargo had to pay a fine of $250 million for fraud, what audit committee chairperson got in trouble? None.
Yeah.
So there is no adult in the room with any of these public companies anymore. And I think that could be a real tangible change we could make in the United States to improve the reporting of our public companies, is to have a independent board of directors that is accountable in a real way and does go back to representing the shareholders instead of themselves and corporate management. Because when you're accusing a company of fraud, you're never really accusing a company of fraud. You're accusing management of fraud. And in China, as it stands, I found it amazing and documented in the movie The China Hustle that it was not illegal to steal from us. And I think some of our members of Congress found it amazing too. They didn't know it. They now do know it, and they're still not doing anything about it. So... And as I said, we've grown from a couple $100 billion in risk to trillions.
Yeah.
So it's gotten worse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the big one company recently, you know, Luckin and Coffee. I don't know if you worked. I worked at the Motley Fool for a couple of years, so I still have a lot of friends there. And, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they. You know, they identified Starbucks early on, you know, in the 90s and did well with it. So I think they were really big on Luckin, and because everyone's thinking, oh, it's Starbucks for China. You know, if Starbucks is big here, imagine how a Starbucks lookalike in China is going to be with, you know, five times the population.
Well, Luckin Coffee is a real company and they sell real coffee and a lot of it.
Yeah.
But what's to stop them from saying they sell more than they do?
Yeah. Yeah.
For a which long time, nothing.
Yeah. Which is exactly what they got caught for.
Right. Which is exactly my problem with IQE. IQ is the ticker symbol. Like, you know, they're the Netflix of China. Bullshit. They're not. They're lying about their numbers. That's what my research shows. And that's the opinion I have based on my research. The same thing with QTTT. I mean, there's here's this company that says that it pays people to read their news. Oh, okay. That's an awesome economic model. And it turns out that the biggest companies that they have that they're paying, right, to use their news platform are related parties that the CEO and his sister own. So they're paying themselves, right? It's just round tripping the money. And that's all out there in my report. Nobody's doing anything about it. I mean, stock's sitting at $2.50, but you know, the Pricewaterhouse just gave another audit with, I don't know, 10 more qualifiers. We may not be able to refute short seller allegations. No fucking shit. You didn't. I guess that's what an auditor has to do now to pass, to give somebody a passing audit, is to acknowledge that I put out these allegations out there and that you're not going to be able to refute them. Okay. You know, and the same thing with IQE, like, you know, we pull their financial filings. And well, I don't want to confuse that. The ticker symbol is IQE ticker symbols in England. And before they went public, because you can pull these credit reports in China, it showed that they're inflating their revenue by 89, 70, and 49% the 3 years prior to going public. So when you have that revenue inflation, you say you have this many subscribers, how do you catch up to that fraud is the point.
Okay, yeah.
So it's just a matter of, are the board of directors going to really investigate or not? Because the SEC cannot. They can't do an investigation in China. They can write them a letter and say, tell us this. I got the New York Times had a piece yesterday, and it was about Luckin for the most part, but part of that piece was very interesting. It listed all the China-based companies that refused to let the PCAOB audit their books. And of course, IQ and QTT were in there. A lot of them are in there. Everybody should know this, that they can just say no to the PCAOB and not let them audit their books.
Unbelievable.
And what happens with these companies, like, for instance, the people that are buying this company, like when I put out my report, they're the same people that help expose in China the Luckin fraud are like, you know, IQ's a fraud, but they're not as much of a fraud. So they're still investable. The smart money in China knows who is and who isn't a fraud. But like, it's like when you reach a certain point, like Luckin did, they're like, oh, okay, you can't get away with this anymore. So they'll turn on them and they'll make money on the other side of it. That report came out of China. You know, Carson retweeted a report that he got. And, you know, I know the individual that did the report and did the work. And, like, he'll be long IQ or QTT because he doesn't think anybody's going to do anything about it, not because he doesn't think they're a fraud.
So, I mean, I know in our last conversation you talked about how you even presented this to the SEC, this kind of information. I mean, why don't they start processes to delist these companies? Is it just the money?
Well, I mean, look, you know, they can't really prove anything if they can't properly investigate, and you can't redline a country.
So, right? So you don't think they could say, all right, if we don't get, you know, if we can't investigate, if we can't check the books, we're going to delist.
I mean, it's not that I don't think that. That's a fact.
Yeah. So, I mean, why don't they – I mean, couldn't they have the legal authority to do that, to say, look, if we don't get this information, we're going to halt trading, period?
Well, you know, they used to do that. They, you know, it's interesting. In, you know, say 2010, some people remember, to about 13, we were – responsible for over a dozen delistings, and allegations half as serious as I've made over the last 2 or 3 years against some of these companies would immediately get a company halted, and an investigation would pursue, And usually it would end up in a delisting. And one of these companies, which was a fraud, ended up suing NASDAQ and winning, which is very hard because they, these exchanges, even though the public company, have kind of quasi-sovereign government immunity rules. And I think the exchanges just pretty much decided that, like, look, our risk of getting sued by an individual investor is almost zero. Our risk of getting sued by these public companies who use shareholder money to sue them, right? It's not even their own money. Is much higher. Yeah, I mean, it's been my big gripe. I've been sued for hundreds of millions of dollars. I think I only have one or two going on right now. I don't know, what is it, Friday? I don't care. But they use, you know, these are CEOs that are committing fraud, right? And as their last act, they'll use shareholder money to sue me with. It's not their own money. So why not? And that just kind of prolongs the process. Because once the lawsuit starts, the SEC and everybody else just kind of says, oh, okay, well, maybe there's going to be discovery and we'll just sit back and wait and see what happens.
And what do you, I mean, when you get sued by these companies, do most of them just do it and then pull the lawsuit, or do they actually take you to court, or do they get to the point where they have to actually do discovery and then they find an excuse not to continue?
I've never gotten to discovery because, A, we've always been right. First of all, I mean, I can't tell you how labor intensive we are about every word and being correct about every word we say. So, you know, if there is a mistake, you can bet it's an honest mistake for sure, which protects you in and of itself, right? There has to be mm-hmm. malice. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't even been a mistake. So there's been a couple companies that have just, you know, for a headline to call me a financial terrorist, because you can say anything you want in a legal complaint, right? So, you know, they call me a financial terrorist, a horrible person, all these things, whatever. I mean, you know, I have parents. I don't think they realize that. I hope they never read this. And then I've had two or three companies that go all the way to have it adjudicated and it's just dismissed. But yeah, I mean, you know, they're just rolling the dice. I mean, we've set precedent in New York State, it's been set in California and elsewhere. But they're never going to stop hassling because it's going to cost me money, right?
And you sure. know,
I have problems with my insurance companies from time to time because, you know, there have been times where, like, I was insured by Chubb where they're on both sides, right? They insured the company and they were insuring me. Guess who they dropped the next year?
Yeah, no kidding.
Right.
And they don't drop you. They just raise your rates to the point where you absolutely
no,
can't.
No. They, no, no.
Oh,
no,
they flat
no,
out drop you, huh? Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I can still get it because I have a real business. I have real economics and things of that nature. But it is the chill on free speech, right? So when somebody doesn't have the kind of money I do, listen, I'll tell you, the first lawsuit I had was $97 million.
Jeez.
And that was in 2011. And I don't care how tough you think you are. The first time you're looking at a $97 million lawsuit on your desk, I mean, your nuts shrivel up just a little bit. It's serious.
Yeah.
It was good that they sued me for that much money, because if they should sued me for $5 or $10 million, I'd have been even more afraid. You know, that they could maybe take, right? So $97 million. I remember speaking to my lawyer, and he's like, you know, these things usually settle. And, you know, if you wanted to settle, how much, you know, I was like, I'm not settling. They're a fraud. I'm telling the truth. I'm not settling. He's like, yeah, I know. Of course they're a fraud. You're not settling. But if you were going to, how much would you settle for? I said, I'm not settling no matter what. They're a fraud. He's like, humor me. I was like, okay. How much are they suing me for? He said, $97 million. How short would you be? I said, I'd be $98 million short. You better get your fucking ass to work.
Yeah,
and we beat them, but they'll you know, of course they'll continue to do it.
Yeah, and I'm sure they probably do what they can in the media to to make you look bad as well. It's probably part.
Well, they did then. They did then. I mean, I remember the first article that was written about me. I was a former counter manager in jewelry, turned short seller, which is, I never managed a jewelry counter in my life. I mean, I managed a, you know, $100 million operation. You know, a jewelry counter manager was like, you know, reported to five people below me. Whatever.
Yeah.
And they knew it. And they knew that, but they wanted to minimize who I was. Now it's just so suspect to these companies. I think it's generally on the other side. It's the Chinese media that absolutely destroys me. I'm, you know, public enemy, at least number two behind Carson.
Oh. So no trips to Beijing for the Winter Olympics next year, huh? Or in 2020?
Yeah, I'm reasonably sure I can't even get into China. And it's really more related to me being a vociferous critic of the government. I'll tell you, when I put out that IQ report 3 weeks ago, I had 1 trillion hits to my website.
1 trillion?
Yeah. They took me down 6 times that day.
Yeah. Wow.
Denial of service attacks. Right.
Wow.
When I do a Fox News hit about Huawei, or when I did the, you know, a Center for International Strategic Studies, the think tank in Washington about why Huawei shouldn't be a part of our critical the telecommunications infrastructure. They harassed me incessantly. The FBI came to my office. And I mean, these, you know, not the local field office. They flew in from, you know, parts I'm not supposed to say, and asked if they could have all of my computers because I was being surveilled by China. I'm like, yeah, welcome to the party. I've been surveilled by them for forever. The question is, what are you going to do about it? Nothing. I'm like, you know, I'm a private citizen. If one of these people showed up on my lawn with a gun, you'd arrest them. But they hack my entire life over and over and over again. You do nothing about it. That's the way it is.
Wow. Man. I mean, do you ever kind of fear a little bit of, you know, somebody coming at you physically? I mean, you know, you're in Philadelphia, you're up in New York. I mean, do you ever think that they might go to that level?
Not for the short selling, okay. On the China side anyway. Like, why ramp it up? Like, you know,
yeah.
They can steal for free. They don't go to jail. I mean, so what? I get somebody for stealing $500 million and they get to keep the money. Why would they want to make it an international incident by you know, killing me? The criticizing the government tends to be a little more on shaky ground for me. I'll tell you where the biggest threat is from, you know, some investor who lost $2,000 in their E-Trade account that, you know, thinks they're right and I'm wrong, and they can't speak to the company in China. So I had one of them show up in my driveway once.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he lived nearby. This is some years back, but you know, and I pull in, I see some guy standing there or sitting in his car. I get out, check my mail, just because I think that's odd. He's either an insurance adjuster of some kind or selling something, whatever. He gets out of his car, starts, you know, hey, are you the guy that put out the report on, you know, Longway Petroleum? But yeah. Now, well, I lost, you know, $3,000, I think he said, whatever, and that's my family's money, and who the fuck do you think you are? Take my family. I was like, listen, man, read the report. They're a rock solid fraud. You know, that's why they're being delisted, whatever. And he's, I think you're wrong. I think somebody should do something about you. And we just got into it for a minute. And I had 2 Rhodesian Ridgebacks almost come through a window.
Jeez. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big gun fan, but I carry one.
I would too. Yeah, absolutely. But I probably wouldn't.
Not in New York.
I probably wouldn't order any Chinese food either, you know, takeout, just to be on the safe side, you know.
I have no problem with the Chinese people. None. We couldn't do what we do and expose the fraud we expose without the help of people in China. And I have nothing but respect and sympathy for the most part for what they have to do in a totalitarian regime. It's my problems with the government. I have my own problems with my own government, right? You know, we're able to criticize our government here. And it is the thing that we have over China and nominally Russia is free speech. I mean, they could not believe, you know, 10 years ago when this started happening, that people like me could crash a $1 billion company or a $10 billion company, because there's no such thing as free speech in China. I mean, there's criminal defamation, right? And what they think defamation is a floating moving target. You have a 15-minute trial, and they'll just throw you in a cell, period, like they did to Kun Hong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Huh. Well, Dan, this has been great. I don't want to take up too much of your time. So if this tickles somebody's fancy out there, what do you recommend? Just go into the Wolfpack website and sign up for the newsletter, or are there other things, you know, Twitter handles and Facebook pages, anything?
Twitter is the best way to get it. I mean, my website's being beefed up, obviously. And I'm going to put some serious money into that so that they can't take me down anymore. To be honest with you, some of our people who signed up to get our reports, you know, emailed to them as soon as they come out, it didn't even happen because of the denial of service attacks. But you can always see it on Twitter, and it's at Wolfpack Reports. So if you follow me at Wolfpack Reports, you'll generally see our reports as they come out. And they're on American companies, they're on China-based companies, they're on any company that we feel is, you know, overvalued, anywhere from accounting misrepresentation, shenanigans, to outright fraud.
Okay, great. Well, again, Dan, thanks for the time. Appreciate it. This has been great as always. So we'll try to get you back in again down the road. But if anybody wants to chat with you, they know your Twitter handle, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Great. Give your father my best.
Will do. Take care, Dan.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast, along with other articles and videos, at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.